Hey folks, we're just coming up on 7:30, so I'm going to go ahead and mute all, as usual. Everybody will have the ability to unmute themselves if they wanted to make a comment or add a question. Please feel free to do so. And welcome to guests as well as members. As always, we welcome guests at any of our meetings. And if you want to become a member, I did paste into the chat window on how you can go on our website to do that. Or you can go to our homepage and just look for the link for renew or join at the top. Later on this evening, the contents of the deck and PDF format, as well as the audio track and the contents of the chat window, will go up on our website, courtesy of Alan. We have a fair amount of information for tonight, a couple of longish presentations. So thank you all to have contributed content for this evening. We should have some time for the final 10. So if you have any questions or thanks. I hope that's a little better, Harvey. Harvey just told me that my volume is low, so hopefully it's a little bit better. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Yes, sure. The volume is much better now.
Thanks.
Okay, starting off then, we have a contribution from Stuart Bruce. It's a YouTube technical video on a different kind of laptop memory. This is a new device which is basically replaceable. Most laptops, because they're so thin and light, the memory chips are soldered onto the motherboard, and it's pretty well impossible to change them unless you've got very sophisticated desoldering and soldering equipment. But these modules, going back to the days when you could basically go buy RAM chips and plug them into slots on your system. And so if you want to know about this new type of memory, this is the video that Stuart recommends that talks about it. As you may see there, it's from an outfit called iFixit. And Stuart is an aficionado of this channel too. It basically has a whole bunch of videos on how to fix things, basically. So if you need to take the back off your computer to get at the hard drive to put in an SSD or switch a cable or something, then these guys probably have all the instructions on which screws to undo and how to pop off these clips that you can't see and that kind of thing. And there's a whole raft of videos on all kinds of different things. And I'm sure if you search for your particular make and model, then you'll find something which is probably helpful to you. So that iFixit. Okay, next up we have a question about Excel, which Chris is going to answer.
I was one with the question as well as the answer. I found on my desktop computer, if Excel is not running, and I open it either by double clicking on a file or right clicking on the pinned tray icon, choosing an existing file from the jump list, or simply opening without loading any data file at all, Excel opens very, very quickly. So if it's not already running, whether I'm opening it with a file or just by itself, no problem, it opens in 2 or 3 seconds. Next. On the other hand, if Excel is already running, and then I go to load a file by either double-clicking an XLS file, in File Explorer, or right-clicking the pinned tray icon, choosing an existing sheet, or anything like that, it can take 15 seconds or longer to open the file. And when I mean longer, I've seen it up to 30 seconds that it actually took to open that additional file. Next. And the question is, why? Why should it take any longer? You would think it would actually take shorter because Excel is already loaded, and all you're doing is you're loading a data file into the instance of Excel that's already running. Next. So let me preface the rest of my part of this presentation by saying that if you don't have this problem, then still pay attention. If you've got this problem, that's great. But this presentation was really put together for more than just solving this particular problem. I was aiming to not only provide people with a solution to this identical problem. If you've got it, that's great. You'll get a good fix for it. But these are the sort of steps that I go through when I'm troubleshooting any problem on my computer. And so you may find it useful for troubleshooting any other problems that you have. Next. So the first thing I did was I went to Perplexity AI, thanks to Bob Harris on pointing out the value of Perplexity AI. But you could use any search engine. So basically just going out and finding out, do other people recognize this as a particular issue? So I asked Perplexity AI, when I double-click an Excel file and it's not loaded, it loads very quickly. If I have Excel already running and then I load a file into it, it can take up to 15 seconds or longer. And I asked the question, why is it so much slower? Next. And Perplexity actually came up with a really good response. So it basically said that Excel can take significantly longer to open a second or subsequent file. So this is the idea, it's already loaded, and so you're loading in another one. Due to the way that it handles dynamic data exchange, DDE, and then it goes into a little bit more detail about what's really in the background about this, which you may or may not care about. If you want to understand a little bit more about dynamic data exchange, great. If not, you go to next, and then it says to fix the issue, what you have to do is modify registry keys, and they tell you exactly where to go in the registry editor to actually make the changes. Next. And then they say, after you make those registry changes, Excel should open subsequent files much more quickly than it did previously. So it came up with a pretty concise answer with a little bit of detail, and there are some notes in there that you can refer to get additional details. Next. So I always recommend that you check references, and if you're on Google or something like that, don't accept just the first hit that you get. Check for additional ones, and certainly whenever it's an AI entity that is answering the question for you, they have been known to hallucinate. And in actual fact, on this one, the first listing under sources was either a hallucination or just didn't answer my question properly, because the first one, the actual problem stated there was saying there's no delay if Excel is already running and you double-click the file. And so they were having exact opposite problem to what I was having. So that was clearly not the right answer. Next. However, the next two on the list there were actually giving, I just repeated the response from Perplexity AI, but that's where this answer actually came from, was these two references. And they were both very, very similar in the reference. Next. They came from what might be more trustworthy sources than just some rando on the internet, one of them being the Microsoft's Answers Forum, and one of them being learn.microsoft.com. And so both those sources I would tend to trust a little bit more, probably learn.microsoft.com a little bit more so than the Microsoft Answers Forum. But there are Microsoft people who actually do look at the Microsoft Answers Forum, and I think if there were incorrect information in there, it would be corrected pretty quickly. So I trust those two sources, and they gave basically the same explanation, and the solutions appeared to make sense to me. Next. So I also went beyond that, and I looked for any additional clues or verification that I could see in there that would say that, yes, this solution looks like it's the right solution to make. So this one here, I saw one where Excel opens a second and subsequent files from Explorer slowly. So that's the problem that I was having. But they went on to say that if you actually go into the running copy of Excel and then you just do file open, it actually opened at its normal speed. And so I tested, and even though it was a subsequent or second file that I was opening, I did get a very quick load of that. And that sort of makes sense, because they were talking about the fact that in the solution they were saying that dynamic data exchange was what was causing the slowdown, and dynamic data exchange is only used if you double-click a file from File Explorer or something like that. that is loading the file into Excel. If you're already in Excel and you do a file open, it's not using DDE to actually open that file. So it opens at the normal speed. So that was confirmation. So that was a good one to get that confirmation. Next. Then I went on and I looked at some additional explanations. When they said that you had to go into the registry editor and you had to modify a couple of keys in there, I looked at what was being modified and I sort of wondered a little bit because it was under HKEY classes root, which basically tells the operating system how to deal with specific files, file types. And there were two keys that were to be changed, excel.sheet.12 and excel.sheet.8. And I wonder, what is this 12 and the 8? And is it version specific to Excel? Or why are these numbers popping in here? And then I saw further on some explanations saying that sheets.12 is for XLSX files. And there's a few others that fall into that as well. And then the XLS8 or the Excel.sheet.8 was referring to different file types. In that case, it's a macro enabled file and things like that. So it again came up with some confirmation that something that made sense and wasn't contradicting any of the other information that I was given so far. Next. Sorry, that's the explanation as to what it came for the .12 and the .8. Next. Okay, so was I confident that the solution was correct? I think yes. I found it on multiple sources, and I found additional information that seemed to support it, and I didn't find any contradictory information other than the first hit from Perplexity AI, which was obviously a wrong statement of problem. So, that one source wasn't related, but the other two sources that I thought were probably trustworthy sounded like they make sense and they concurred, which was important to me. So next. So what if both of them were wrong? So that's entirely possible. When you're doing searches for solutions on the internet, there are a lot of wrong answers out there. So what if both of these turned out to be wrong despite my searching for confirmation and other things like that? So the first thing I have to ask myself is, if they're both wrong, can I reverse that solution that I've implemented? And in this case, yes, I know that I can reverse it, and I'll come back to that in a little bit. Next. So you go ahead and make the change. And this is one place where they were just a little bit short on the information as well. So they say in this case, you actually have to open up the registry editor. You have to navigate to the following keys. And then they say change the value. Actually, that's correct. Change the value at both keys to a specific value. Next. So in the registry editor, you drill down on the left-hand panel to get to that spot. In this case, it's under computer, HKEY classes root, excel.sheet.12, shell, open, and DDE exec. Now, the one thing they didn't say was that they said change the value of both. Well, in actual fact, there's just one value that is below that. They could have been more complete in saying that there is a value there called default, and you want to edit that value. But there is only one there, so I just go in, double-click on it, next. And then I put in the replacement for data value. Now, I think it's really important to copy and paste the information from the web page that had the solution rather than typing it in manually. The reason for that is you want to make sure that, you have it perfectly accurate. The number of spaces that are in there, case sensitivity may be important, all kinds of things like that. So it's best to do a copy and the paste. And then next, I went and made the same change at excel.sheet.8. Next.
Yeah, I think that's what they mean, Chris, when they say change the values of both keys.
Yeah, well, they are saying change, like default isn't a key. So the key is actually the key is actually HKEY classes root, excel.sheet.12, shell, open, DDE exec. That's the actual key that you're changing, but you don't actually modify the key. You modify the value of the data below that key, and that's where they slipped up a little bit in their explanation. I think they counted on the fact that people who are doing this probably know how to navigate and edit in the registry, but they could have been a little bit more complete on it. So I ended up going and making the same change at, you know, hkclasses root excel.sheet.8 shell open dde exec, and then the value of default, I edited that so the value data was the same, you know, open in square brackets and %f and all the rest of it there. Next. Okay, so it actually worked. I didn't even have to reboot or anything like that. Excel now loads additional files instantly. And I come back to the fact, can I back out from this? And yes, if it had not worked, I would have immediately gone in and edited that default value back to the original, which was blank. So if you're making a change in the registry, a change of value data, make sure you make a note of what data was there before so that if you have to reverse it, that you can go back in. This one was real simple because the value data was just blank. And so I would go back in, edit out that data, click on OK, do the same at the excel.sheet.8, and it would have been back to the original settings. Next. So some of the lessons here for finding solutions is, in a general sense, this is the approach that I usually take. So ask Google or AI, your favorite AI engine, fellow OPCUG members, friends, anybody, you know, ask around. See if anybody else is running into exactly the same problem that you're having and might have a solution for you. Next. And then try to find multiple answers. Okay, don't go with just one answer, preferably. Now, if you can easily back out from a change, if all you can find is one answer, I would go ahead and try that as long as it didn't seem radical or anything like that. As long as I can back up from it, I'm not too worried about it. But if I can find multiple answers that seem to make sense, that say the same solution or very similar, not parroting exactly the same thing ideally, so it's just, you know, people come up independently with the same sort of solution, and then they offer a solution that you can try as long as you can recover. So if the solution doesn't work or causes other problems on your computer, you want to be able to back up from that. Next.
I think that's it.
Yes. So that's it. So hopefully that'll help people with, if anybody has that Excel problem, this definitely should fix your problem. And from a general point of view, a general troubleshooting technique, I think could serve people really well to go through steps like that.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts there, Chris. Normally when they want you to edit the registry, they suggest that you make a backup. And then you can reload that file to bring yourself back to square one.
Backing up the whole registry can be a bit of a pain to do, and you don't really want to restore the whole registry. You can go down to a given key level, and you can select a key and save everything from there and lower. So in this case here, going to the key, if you back up a little bit there, Alan, at least one slide worth. So here where you see it saying hkclasses root excel.sheet.12, you could actually go and select that key, and then if you right-click on it, you can actually export that key, and then you could do the same on excel.sheet.8, right-click on it, and choose to save that key, and it'll just save that information, and then you could just restore just that key by double-clicking on the reg file that you actually export. So that's not a bad way, too, to do it. I don't suggest doing your entire registry, though. It can be a really huge file. So doing select keys that you save out is not a bad way to be able to back up.
You probably don't have a second solution then, which is to just make a disk image before you start playing with the registry.
Yeah, you can do that too. Especially if you're brand new to register editing. Being able to back up by a restore of your entire computer is not necessarily a bad idea.
Or create a restore point.
Yeah. Does a restore point include, I guess it, does it include H key, all of the keys, or is it like, in this case, we're editing, you know, H key class's root as one of the keys. Do you know if it backs up that as well?
Oh, it backs up the registry. It backs up where you are in the file system because NTFS logs everything. So you actually have a history in your logs going back, I don't know, at least an hour or two that okay. You could probably back out of with a restore point, as well as installing other programs and stuff. So it's really complete.
Okay. Yeah, good idea.
Tom had an interesting note in the chat, Chris. Since you're having a problem with dynamic data exchange, he points out that this was a Windows and OS 2 inter-application data communication protocol, 34 years and change old.
Yeah, DDE has been around a long time for it. And I very rarely hear about DDE anymore. But obviously it's still being used. Microsoft itself is using it with Excel to load data files. So it is still being used.
It's also a way of actually connecting up spreadsheets as well as, you know, Windows documents and so on, so they can each kind of refer to each other and then put them into the documents. So you can go all over the place and grab information and put it in. So it's it could be quite extensively used in some applications.
Okay, so thanks, Chris, for that. So next up, we have Bob Harris, our AI guru. Chris already mentioned his interest in Perplexity AI. Tonight, he's going to talk a little bit more about Suno. And I believe, Bob, you're going to share your screen and take over.
Very good. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you. If I do this right, and as Chris said, share the sound and optimize for video. If it goes right, you should see, oh my gosh.
Your desktop.
You should see something now?
Yep.
That works.
Oh, good. Okay, we see welcome to Suno, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you both. Okay, well, here we are. Welcome to Suno. Here we go. You should know, Suno means listen. So what is Suno? It's the AI platform that lets anyone make music. It makes writing and creating songs as simple as sending a text message. Suno is a major advancement in AI music creation. Now, Suno actually creates original music. It does not copy existing songs. It allows both amateurs and professionals to create real music. And there are some professionals that actually use this to a degree. Suno was launched last year in September 2023. Today, 8 months later, this Boston area company has attracted 12 million users. You no longer need to know how to sing or play an instrument or read music to bring musical ideas into your life. Now, before we start, I'm guessing that many of you have never considered making a song. Do you ever have problems shopping for unique and memorable gifts? When you say happy birthday to a coworker or a friend, do you still go and purchase one of those soon-to-be-forgotten, off-the-shelf greeting cards? Would you like an easy way to create something special and truly unforgettable? Well, Suno has you covered. Now you can turn your thoughts and ideas into full songs. It's time to unleash and express yourself with a whole new medium. First, we get started with a free account at Suno, and it's really easy. We go to suno.com and click the sign up button. You'll only need your email address. What I always do is sign up with Google. It's even easier. Anyway, it's easy. You can do this in less than 1 minute. You do not need a credit card. Once your free account is set up, it'll be ready instantly. You can start using Suno instantly. You simply hit the create button. Hope I clicked the audio button on here. Well, we'll see if I did that soon. Anyway, the create button. There we go. And before you know it, here you are. Let's create a simple song. Recorded the steps. I generated 2 songs and recorded them exactly as it went, with no little adjustments at all. You'll see the raw, what we've got here. Anyway, let's do a simple song. In this case, we will not use the custom button up here. So Suno will do everything for us. So, we enter our prompt in the description box. Create a happy birthday song for Bugs Bunny. He's 44 years old. He's clever and witty. He often says, "What's up, Doc?" He loves computers and carrots. Make it a happy and joyful song, and then we press create. Oh my gosh. We press create. It says, "Couldn't generate that. Seems Bugs Bunny is an artist." Oh well, don't worry. We'll replace Bugs Bunny with Bob. Here we go again. We'll just change, use the exact same prompt. Place Bugs Bunny with Bob. And then press create again. All done. We just created 2 songs. It only took 20 seconds. Now we can download our songs. We click on the ellipsis, or the 3 little dots. We get files in both audio and video. Pretty cool. Now we have 4 files for 2 songs. Each song has an MP3 audio file and an MP4 video file. Our song were downloaded to our computer and our folder of our choice, of course, on our PC right here. And there's the 4 files. Anyway, this is a screenshot of the MP3 file. You won't hear it just yet, but you will hear it. And then this is one of the MP4 video files. The graphic is whatever. And there's some of the text on here, your Windows Media Player. And now, when you play this MP4 video, I won't have this on PowerPoint, I'm sorry, but you'll hear the song. It displays the lyrics. As each line is sung, the lyrics enlarge. So you can see the graphics on top is a little dubious, but anyway, you can see your video, you'll see the words if you want the graphic version or just the audio. So let's hear our Suno AI generated lyrics. As you can see, it did a great job. Let's hear how it sounds, and I hope you can hear this if I hit that button right. Okay, I'll make you go through the whole thing. I hope you heard that, did you?
Yep, no problem.
Okay, good. Hit the right button. Thank you for the warning, Chris, on that one. Anyway, the tune is a little off, I don't know, but we did ask for happy and joyful, so that's what we got here. Let's keep going. Now, let's try a custom song. Hit the word of the custom block on the website here. But I don't like to use create my own lyrics, so I'm going to use ChatGPT to create our lyrics. I like to use artificial intelligence so I can sound real smart. So this is my ChatGPT prompt. written exactly. Went back to the, this is the original prompt. We use it again here in ChatGPT. And we say, create a happy birthday song for Bugs Bunny. He's 44 years old. He's clever and witty. He often says, what's up, Doc? He loves computers. Make it a happy and joyful song. Here's a, came back looking really nice, but no problem with Bugs Bunny here. And we'll go one more here. Now, that was in ChatGPT. Now, we copy and paste. That was only lyrics. We're going to copy and paste our ChatGPT lyrics into Suno. Not simple to do. We copy and paste, and there's our song right there. So we in our custom song, we select our style of music by using our own words. And we ask for a folk music with guitars and a quiet drum. Then we use suggested words, which were ambient, and then a little phrase in a country setting. We created a song title. We called it the Bunny Birthday Song. And then we click Create. This really is easy. I can't stress it enough. There is not much to this. Anyway. Okay. It's really simple. Okay. Let's create. And all done. We just generated two songs. I timed it. It took 23 seconds. And once again, I'm hitting a key instead of spacebar. Okay, once again, we have four files for two songs. Each song has an MP3 audio file and an MP4 video file. These are downloaded to my hard drive here. The names of the songs, I put A and B. There's other names on this, but just to know what they are. And we'll hit the next one here. Okay. So for our custom songs, these are the lyrics generated by ChatGPT. Now, Suno had no problem with Bugs Bunny the artist, and it made a graphic for the video. It looks okay. The entire process took less than 3 minutes with the copying and pasting. Let's hear our custom song.
What's up, Doc? It's your special day. The cleverest rabbit in every way. 44 years, still going strong. With computers and carrots, you belong. Happy birthday, Bugs Bunny. You're so witty and so funny. With a carrot in your hand and computers oh so grand. You've outsmarted everyone, it's true. With your tricks and your clever cues. From the screen to the digital age, you're a timeless star on every stage. Happy birthday, Bugs Bunny.
Okay, I won't make you go through any more of that. But I hope you understand, you only need to provide a few characteristics or habits or hobbies about someone to generate a wonderful song. You can imagine how this would look if we picked a, I won't pick anybody that, here because I've already picked on Alan and Chris a lot. Nobody named here. You do this for somebody, they will be impressed. Just remember, don't let them know how easy this is to do. Okay, once you try it, you'll experience the joy of creating your own songs. And you don't need to know anything about music, and everyone can do this. You'll surprise your family, your friends, your coworkers. You'll even surprise yourself. You can create songs for birthdays. You can create songs for podcasts, introduction songs of music and podcasts, your podcasts. A special song will always make an anniversary more memorable. Health and safety songs keep safety top of mind. Marketing campaigns always need a catchy jingle that sticks in customers' minds. And maybe you could finally make those employee training sessions more engaging. And lastly, graduation songs inspire and celebrate achievements, and they inspire graduates as they embark on the next adventures. I'm sure by now you're all eager to learn about what you can get with a free Suno account. Yes, with your free Suno account or basic plan, you get 50 credits that renew daily, every day. So you can generate up to 10 songs per day, and you're allowed to use and share your songs for non-commercial use. Now, for a small fee of only $8, you can move up to a pro account, and then you can generate songs for commercial use. However, your free account will make any occasion unforgettable. So I hope now you can tell someone, I made a song for you. Thank you.
Very good, Bob. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. And we'll stop the share.
I like Linda's comment in the chat. Sure beats receiving something you have to dust.
Very good. How do I get out of here for you guys here? You don't want to see that.
So Elizabeth's asking if you can submit a recording of your voice and let AI generate the song with your voice singing.
Yes, I believe that might be in the paid accounts. I don't know for sure on it. I haven't done that yet. I won't say if it haven't done for sure.
That's a neat idea, though.
But I can tell you, if you generate I read the fine print, and you want to do this properly and legally, and I showed you the Bugs Bunny thing, that's a notable person. If you generate a song, you can use it on social media, you can use it sharing it around, whatever. But if you want to put it on a paid account and use that song, then you're violating the terms. So all you have to do is go and pay $8 a month for 1 month. You can make a ton of songs for 1 month, regenerate that song during the $8 period, and then that song is now allowed for commercial use. It's your song. Your full commercial use, whatever you want with that song, it's your song. You're fully yours. Then turn off your $8. You only spent $8. So if you're a business and you want to do, I'm serious about training stuff, and I listen to a lot of podcasts. I think Tom does too. There's always a little intro at the beginning. And if you put a little song, keep it in somebody's head about on the ladder safely, whatever, it'll have an impact. And for a business, $8 in 1 month would give you enough song to last for a whole year and longer. Anyway, it's neat stuff. I think I'm thrilled.
Okay, thanks very much, Bob. There's lots of people saying great presentation. And I think, heads up, I think I have to warn you here. I see a comment from Chris. He says, I'm getting ideas.
Very good.
Don't worry. You don't have to worry, Alan. Somebody else has to.
Okay. Was there another comment there?
I was just saying it better not be me.
No.
Anyway, that's a Suno.com. It's nothing to it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, folks.
All right, next up we have a loony link. And this is from Tom. So, Tom, do you want to open your mic and talk about this?
Okay. Yes, this is another loony link from Toronto. This is Mark Bennett. He's works as a comedian, but he likes cameras, and I think likes getting free stuff. So he has a YouTube channel, and I find it interesting. He's tries to be economical, so he has a bunch of strange brands. But I think it's worthwhile if you're interested. He could do it's almost like an unboxing each time rather than a true review. But I would recommend it if you're interested in cameras and want to get ideas. So travel tripod, a gimbal. He mainly talks about video things for use in vlogging, video vlogging. So he has that Polyland Lark M2 remote microphone. And so there's a lot of interesting stuff if you're thinking of getting into anything for photographic, phones or drones or gimbals, then this might be a good place to wander around in.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Don't go away because the next item is yours too. You're going to tell us something about MuBlock Origin, I believe.
Yes, I am, and I will share my screen. This is it. And share. You should see this now.
Yes.
MuBlock Origin is a browser add-on that basically uses a bunch of lists of bad websites and so on to protect you and to avoid ads and things like that. So it's for browsing safer, faster, and quieter. So why do you want to block ads? Well, it may seem obvious, but there are a few reasons. A noise, it's a distraction, they get in the way, they make it hard to read the other things. Some ads load or are malware. And even from the best websites, because the best websites basically contract out their ads to other companies, and other companies can take ads and they don't know what's actually in them because of all the JavaScript. And it's also speedier because you don't download the ads. So how do you get it? You can install it. This is the Firefox page, but it's also in the Chrome Web Store and in the Edge and Opera and Thunderbird add-ons. Now, when you get into it, these are the settings. As you can see at the top, there's settings, filter. There are a variety of things you can look at and often fiddle with. And I have I turn on everything except cloud support. There's privacy. I don't worry about the theme or the default behavior or blocking media elements. And I do click on that I'm an advanced user, and that gets you more things. But so I turn these on, and the next thing you can do is choose your filter list. So there are a whole variety of filter lists that have reference a whole variety of web URLs, websites. And as you can see here, there's approximately 406,000. Of ads and malware, and another 256,000 of cosmetic filters, which basically are things that are in the way but aren't quite ads. I have my filters, which I'll come across later. But you can turn these all on. MuBlock has a whole bunch of things, and you can see how many. It says something like this number used out of 109, and basically what that means is that of the 109, 104 are new ones compared to what's already in their list, and five were previously found. There's also a bunch of other lists, the Easy List, AdGuard, ads and mobile ads, privacy, different list, malware protection, multipurpose, Peter Lowe, Dan Pollock's host file, that's the MVPS. EasyList, AdGuard, social widgets, because there's more. EasyList, AdGuard, Fanboy, annoyances, more AdGuard annoyances, uBlock filters annoyances. I didn't open this up, but if you browse it regularly in another language, you may want to open this particular thing up. Regions and languages, and because then, whoops. Let's go back to Jerry. What happened to it? Okay. And I guess I have to share as well. Okay. Well, I think the filter's one and filter's two. Oh, didn't I do that? And there's a whole bunch of custom things that you can also turn on. Trandyline, there's a whole bunch of things. And these are all basically put on Git. So they're generally acceptable, available to by people. So you can turn on all those filters and block a whole bunch of things. Now, you can also do more. You can control it. This is the, if you click on the uBlock origin button in your browser, this is what you get. This is their dashboard. It has all the URLs that you're currently on the page that you're actually looking at, as well as other things you can turn on and off. You can turn uBlock Origin completely off by clicking this. You can reload the page after you do that, or before, or any time. I'll get into these and these, and it gets into, this tells how many URLs are blocked on this page and how many domains. These are the per site switches. These are When you put it on, this is the site you're on. In this case, it's probably on google.com. And so these are per site switches. For example, you can you can remove all cosmetic filtering, turn it on and off. You can stop large media elements. You can stop pop-ups. You can stop any scripting on that site. And no remote site, no remote fonts. You can turn that off too. The tools are, and I'll go into this a little bit later, but you can zap an element on the current page by clicking the zapper. You can also create a filter for the current site. If this is something that will be more permanent. This is where you report problems with this chat button. Usually you'll turn on the logger when you report that, when they get in contact with you to get more information. And these are advanced settings. So this is, in this particular thing, you can do dynamic filtering. Now, when you do access a website, and open the dashboard, this is what you will see. If you see at the left, there are different colors, green, red, and yellow. Green, it says none of the URLs for this domain are being blocked. Red says that all of the URLs from this domain are being blocked. And the yellow means that some are being blocked. And you can also see this in the pluses and the minuses. The pluses show how many links are blocked. One plus is 1 to 9, 2 pluses is 10 to 99, and 3 pluses is 100 plus. And you can also see this for minus, but this minus only applies to dynamic filtering. So it doesn't necessarily apply to the static filters that I showed you before. Those are called the static filters. These are dynamic filters, and dynamic means that you can create. It also has this one particular thing, this just means that this is, CloudFront actually provides a service where they copy or echo different pages on websites. Have I been Poland uses this a lot, I think. And a spectrum, so this basically says that this is really spectrum. This is a spectrum.ieee.org. Spectrum is a magazine, and the IEEE is the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers. So dynamic. So let's see how you can dynamically change things. Dynamic filtering rules override any static filtering. So you can block or you can allow filters, any of these filters. And the way you do that is that let's go back a little bit. You can see that there are two columns here, and the two columns are meant for local, which applies to this website only. Sorry, global, which applies to this, which applies to all websites, and local, which applies to this URL, this website only. Other pages, but this website. And the way that you set them is by clicking on the left, the middle, or the right of that particular column and row. And if you click on the, if you go there and you click on the pink, it will block it for this, for this particular website. If you go over here and click here, it'll show pink, and then it will turn red when you click it, and that will block the website for all future occurrences of it on any website. So you left column is for global rule, the right column is for current website, and you click the left side of the column and the right side, and you click the middle for no options. That's why most of these are gray. Gray says basically, light gray says there's no rule. And if it's a dark gray, it says do not apply dynamic rule. So light gray says that you're just going to go with the static rules. So you can add your own filtering for a particular website where you want to not do things. And as you can see here, you can turn off frames or scripts, first party or inline. Because first-party scripts are on the same website, inline are in the actual page, or any third-party stuff, or any images. If you block everything, then everything is blocked from that website, no matter what. And that's, if it's global, then basically that's a web filter that's turned everything off. If you click over here, it turns that website off forever until you unblock it. And the way you save changes is, once you've made a change over here or to the tools or the, can't remember what the other things were called, but if you make a change over there to any of the tools, then this lock will show up. And you can click that lock and save that. And then your changes are permanent until you change them again. And this is how you can create your own dynamic rules and save them. Now, where do the rules show up? That you created these dynamic rules, they show up here under My Rules. And there's two types of rules. These are the global ones, and these are the temporary rules. These are the ones that are only for the particular website, I think. And what happens if you block a website? Then this is what shows up. It tells you, oh, this has prevented the following page from loading because of the following filter, which has been found in this Light DNS block list. And you can, don't warn me about this again, it'll just continue to stay blocked. So you can go back or you can proceed. So, if you proceed, then you won't get another warning about it again, but you'll be able to proceed. Now, one thing you can do with uBlock Origin is you can block other website elements, such extra cruft or anything, or extra ads that got by the filters or something like that. And the way you do that, let's try to block this particular right-hand section. I don't want to see that. I just want to see all the main stuff. So you right-click in the element you want to block. So I right-click over here. And if you see down at the bottom, this is the block element. You can click that. And what you get is something like this. All the what you selected turns red or reddish, and it has, even if it's some other color to begin with and not a default color, you get the red frame around it. And so these are listed down here in order of what they are, because all of the elements on a web page are kind of nested inside of other elements. So here there's a cross-reference to another thing, so you can click that, and you get to America Reports. And then this is a locked FB schedule item. Then there's this is inside of an unordered list, and the schedule list, blah, blah, blah. And if you can click them in turn, and the reddish highlights show up here. So basically you go down until everything you want to be eliminated is highlighted, but you haven't gone any more. So if you go down here, it will actually, this actually blocks the whole page. But here is where I want to do primary desktop, small, minimum desktop, sidebar. So this is the side, this is what I want to block. And so I click that, and I select that, and then I click create. And voila, it's gone. It's missing. So you can do that to anything that's on the web page, and you can block the whole web page or anything, any bigger pieces of it. It's especially useful for ads or other junk that didn't get caught by the filters. And you do, those blocks are stored here in this My Filters. So here's BD Glass, Toronto Life, and here's the one I did. Foxnews.com, sidebar, primary, desktop, small, blah, blah, blah. So you can go back and delete them if you want, and then you'll see those things again. And they're fairly easy. You can always copy this stuff and then do a select and recopy it back in again. Or you can do a select if you do want it. I don't know that define would work, because I have 514 lines here, so might be hard to find something. So, in summary, it's a useful tool for managing your web surfing, for safety, for speed. They get rid of all those ads. And thanks for SlidesGo for this particular slide template. Are there any questions?
I didn't see anything in the chat, Tom.
Nope, nothing there.
Okay, so thanks very much, and we'll move along. I think we're about done. We're heading right up to 8:30 here, I guess. So I didn't see any questions in the chat window. If anybody has any burning questions, now's the time. But before we quit, let me just remind you that lots of time for questions next week, hopefully. Next Wednesday is July the 3rd, and we will have another Q&A session. So as usual, if you send your questions or topics that you'd like to share, like Bob and Tom tonight, send us some information to the suggestion box, and we'll be happy to add you to the agenda. Thanks to everybody who gave presentations tonight or suggestions, and I think that's everything we have.
Just a reminder that we don't have regular monthly meetings through the summer, July and August, but we will have Q&A on those evenings.
And Elizabeth's just noting that she doesn't have any questions, but she says that the online business is getting more and more complicated all the time, and it's important, unfortunately. So if you want to know more about it, just ask away and we'll see what we can come up with. Okay, so that's it for me, and we'll see you next week, next Wednesday.
Thanks, folks. We'll see you then.